Like notes through the hourglass, these are the songs of our lives.
The Remix!
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Songs of Our Lives. I'm Brad Rose. I'm an artist, a composer, a writer, the founder of Foxy Digitalis, and someone who thinks about music and sound far more than is healthy. Each week, I invite on a guest to talk about the songs and the music that has meant a lot to them and left its mark. Previous guests include Yada, Jeff Parker, Claire Rousset, Sarah Hennies, Whitney Johnson, Patrick Shirishi, I don't know, so many people, so many awesome people. You should go and listen. But this week, for the first time, we have a return guest. And of course, it's the one, the only, Jeff Tobias. So, Jeff is, you know, he was the real guinea pig. He was the first episode back in September of 2023. And I knew when I started this that I had to come up with a reason or a way to have guests come back on. So it's like, you know, you have somebody on and it's awesome. You have a great time, but like, you can't really do the same questions again. So here we are, the remix, and we've got all new questions. It gets a little weird. I don't know. This was, again, Jeff was the guinea pig. Anytime I think I do this, you know, we have a third iteration, you can be sure Jeff's going to be the first person I reach out to. But yeah, Jeff's awesome. We had a lot of fun. I do want to give a special mention to the Mandatory Liberation Volume 1 compilation that his label Strategy of Tension co-released with Gold Bolas Records last year. Amazing compilation for a great cause. All the proceeds are donated to an organization that gives eSIMs to people in Gaza. And it's got a lot of amazing music on it. And yeah, I don't know. Jeff's great. Everybody should be, yeah, following what Jeff's up to. I'm excited to see what he does this year, and mostly just am appreciative for him being game to do this again. And hope you all like the remix episodes. Gonna, you know, try to intersperse them amongst the regular episodes this year. We'll see how it all goes. But yeah, we recorded this just before Christmas and it was a delight. And I hope you enjoy it. My guest today is a musician, a composer, a multi-instrumentalist, a label boss. Hey, and when it comes to Songs of Our Lives, he's the first name on the call sheet. It's Jeff Tobias. Woo!
Hello.
Welcome back.
Thank you so much for asking me back.
Yeah. So how's it going? You've been busy.
Yeah. It's going really good. Yeah. It's been a pretty insane year, but, yeah, it's been good.
You've been on the road a lot, it seems like. Yeah.
Well, so like last, when did we do that first episode?
It was like maybe August of last year.
August of last year, right.
Yeah.
Okay, so then, yeah, starting in October of 2023 and going through April of 2024, I went on 5 tours.
Jesus. That's a lot of tours.
Yeah, I did 3 tours with A Savage and then 1 with Modern Nature and 1 with KO Dot. And I also did a weekend of shows with Peter Curlin and Brent Cordero and Ryan Sawyer in L.A., or in Southern California, one of which I had to bail on because I got so insanely sick when we played in Joshua Tree. It was kind of scary. But anyway, yeah, so lots and lots of gigs in that stretch of time. And then I kind of like chilled out over the summer. I worked on my own album, and just recently I did spend some time in London making another record with Modern Nature, And then we also did, we recorded another album with the same lineup of Modern Nature, backing up Bridget Dawson. Who was like this incredible vocalist who was in the original lineup of the OCs.
Yeah.
So that's like the most like recent, like travel, adventure.
And you're going back to the UK like early in January, probably around the time this comes out, right? I think I just saw you mention that online. Yep.
Yeah. Modern Nature, we have a show at a venue called the Lexington on January 8th, or as they might say, 8 January. And then I'm also doing a solo set at the 100 Years Gallery on 10 January.
Man. All right, good. Get those plugs in. You've also, the label has been doing some really cool stuff this year. The label's called Strategy of Tension. Should probably mention that. But I specifically want to ask about the Mandatory Liberation Volume 1 comp. If you just want to like talk about it, that's amazing, obviously, for a very good cause. But yeah, if you just want to, like, how did that happen and come together and...
Yeah. So this was a compilation that Strategy of Tension did with Gold Bolus Recordings, which is my good friend Dave Reuter's label. And yeah, I mean, going back basically through my entire life as a musician, I've always wondered how artists can try to do anything that can affect things on a broader scale. Mm-hmm. And you know, collectively, when we all kind of, when you get a whole bunch of artists together who are all going to say, okay, for this recording or for this performance, we're going to forego our fee. We're going to like, just do this for free. And then you can kind of, then you can get something going in terms of like, you know, raising money. Right. And so that was the idea. You know, we've been watching this horror show unfolding in Gaza for the last year. I don't need to explain that, but you know, Dave and I, we just said we'd like to try to do something in some small way. So we did a fundraiser compilation for Crips for eSIMS for Gaza, which is an organization that is trying to help Palestinians stay in contact with the outside world. And we just like put the word out to our wider community of musicians, and we wound up with 25 incredible songs from, you know, friends and colleagues and collaborators that, you know, sort of it's somewhat geographically specific to New York, because I know that Gold Bolus Recordings is very focused on representing like specifically the New York community of musicians and artists.
Right.
Strategy of Tension doesn't have the same geographic concerns, but I couldn't have been prouder of the collection of tunes we got. And I couldn't be more honored that these people were willing to like I said, sort of say, okay, we're going to give you this one and put it towards the cause.
Is there, I realize it just came out, but volume one hints that there may be future volumes.
Yeah, we left the door open, you know. I mean, you know, Dave Reuter, you know, he and I, we work together in the band The Reps. He's just, you know, I talk with him nearly every day. We're really close friends, and I expect that we'll want to work on something like this again in the future. And, you know, it's... I also like compilations are kind of like a way to sort of like contextualize, even if there's not like some sort of like a collective or like firm sort of in a box definition of how these artists are connected. It's like a snapshot of this sort of like wider universe of artists that are connected, you know, either to me or Dave or both. And it's a nice way to sort of just sort of like say like, oh, well, like, how do you, we connect, for example, Chris Cochran to, in Mega Fortress, you know, like,
right.
They might not even know each other, but they they might have been in the same room together and not even know, because that's what music is. Music is like, I don't know about you, but like, I'm always meeting people and then realizing that we were on a bill together 11 years ago in Chicago. You know, it's like music is a connective lattice work that, that I'm always really like amazed at how it sort of can connect people in unexpected ways. So I think the compilation could be a cool series that could, you know, unite people in time and space, things like this.
Gosh, I've had that experience so many times where you're like, your name's kind of familiar. Wait, we were at this thing or did this thing. So I love compilations too for that. I mean, that, like, I like that perspective on it too. I think that's, I mean, I've had similar experience where it's like, oh, hey, we were on a compilation together.
Exactly. Like, yeah. And,
I don't know. We all need more like of that connective tissue in our lives. So any which way we can find it, hey.
Yeah. And I want to, if I may, I want to give a quick shout out to one of the artists on the compilation that I'm always trying to impress on people how significant their inclusion on the compilation is. So Ashcan Orchestra is the project of a composer and instrument builder named Pat Spadini, who has been working under the Ashcan Orchestra name for over a decade, but this is the first time anything he's recorded has ever been released.
Oh, wow.
Part of that is because so much of the Ashcan Orchestra aesthetic is based around performance and also a visual component, because a lot of the time he builds instruments that have a light component. Awesome. But when I first moved back to New York in 2012, I saw Ashcan Orchestra perform. And at that time, they were doing this configuration where it was Pat joined by a bunch of other musicians, largely percussionists, people who were at the time in bands like Cloud Becomes Your Hand and The Dreebs and PC Worship. And they were all performing seated on the floor in a circle using handbells. And they would be reading these somewhat simple lines that would just have, you know, two notes on them more or less, but it would come together in this sort of minimalist composition that it, I say minimalist, but it actually has much more in common with like Messiaen in terms of its like harmonic language. But there's like this punk DIY sort of quality that Pat brings to it that avoids any kind of like saccharine or sentimental kind of qualities that are sometimes found in that sort of formal music.
Right.
Pat's a genius. He's also incredibly down to earth, which I'm like laughing, thinking that he would not like to be described such. But the piece that he contributed to the compilation is so incredible. And I understand 25 songs could be a lot for someone to listen to. I think all the music on this comp is worth hearing. But if you're listening to this right now, after you're done listening to this podcast, go listen to the track by Ashcan Orchestra, because it's amazing. And I love that music so much.
That's awesome, man. Well, I remember that track because I've listened to the comp a couple times and I really like it. But now knowing that history behind it, man, I want to hear more, but there's nowhere to hear more. So
I think there's footage on YouTube, which I would encourage people to check out as well. Okay. Because I mean, I've seen Ashcan perform, and I've also, full disclosure, I've performed in Ashcan, even though I was like way out of my league. insanely talented musicians. But anyway, Ashcan Orchestra, big shout out.
Awesome. Okay, well, we're going to, I have no segue here because,
let's do it.
Well, actually, this is a good segue. Well, no, this isn't a good segue. Fuck it. So, all new questions here. Like I was saying before, I have not done this yet. I haven't tried these before. I mean, I've been working on them for a year because I knew I was going to, when I started this, I was like, well, I can't just do one and done. Like, what if I, you know, you have people on, you have a really good time. Like, we had a really good time. I was like, there's got to be a way to do it again. So, we're going to see how this goes. So, thanks for being the guinea pig.
Happy. Happy to be here.
So The first question for this time is, what is a song that you wish you could hear again for the first time?
Yeah, I said Horizontal Hold by This Heat.
Not, and you meant specifically the what you were thinking of. You told me which it's the version I was listening to again. Now I can't, it's escaped me. The one that's on
Made Available.
Made Available. I really like this pick because I remember, like, when I first heard This Heat, I don't know that I was like quite ready to hear This Heat. Like, I liked it and stuff, but now they're like one of my favorite bands ever.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's like, I wish I could go back and hear it again for the first time.
I know. Yeah. And I mean, I was thinking about how, by the time I heard Horizontal Hold, I was already familiar with This Heat from listening to Deceit, which is their best album, and Horizontal Hold is not on that album. So I'd already kind of digested Deceit, but then I heard this song and it's just like a mind blowing track.
Yeah.
Cause it does one of my favorite things that a song can do at the very outset, which is it starts with like a little bit of this sort of like kind of quiet, they did the trick of like, here's a little quiet thing. So you turn your stereo up and then they hit you with that insanely intense groove.
Yes.
It's so good. But then also it's like that. They also have that really clever move of changing things on a dime.
Right.
Several times.
Yeah. Just constant, like almost constantly.
Yeah. And you know, when I was recording with Modern Nature, Tara Cunningham, who just joined the group, she was using that as an example of tape edits, you know, which I think that's probably what it was, is that they were jumping between different sections of tape of recording. But it also feels pretty cohesive, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it seems so seamless the way, like, man, yeah, I mean, which you can obviously do with tape edits, but yeah, it does feel, I don't know, that's like a thing I really love when I hear people do it, because it's a hard thing to do really well, I think, to just, like, it never lets you get too comfortable.
yeah, I mean, it's just, you're just sort of, it feels like the musical equivalent of an audience watching some kind of like, I'm imagining a listener sort of going, what? Right. like your jaw's already on the floor, and then you're just sort of like, I can't believe they did that. It's heroic. It's such a great song.
Yeah. And
they opened with it when I saw This Is Not This Heat in New York.
Oh, and wow.
I was already kind of drunk before they started, and I just turned to the stranger next to me and I was like, if they play Horizontal Hold, I'm going to start climbing up the walls. And then we started with it with strobe lights, and it was just sort of like, yeah, I was like the Maxell guy, just like, so sick.
That's amazing. Wow. Yeah. Well, it's all downhill from here. Cause where do you go after This Heat? But,
We got some good.
I know we have. There's a lot of things here I'm really excited to talk about. Okay, well, what is a song? Once you hear it, it's stuck in your head for days.
So this is a song by the band Ponytail, and the song is called, they don't say the name of the song in the song. It's called "Dear God, Please Make My Two Eyes Into One." Do you know this band Ponytail?
I fucking love this band so much.
Hell yeah. Dude.
Oh my God. This is like where cause I love Dustin Wong. Like, I'm a huge fan. And yeah, before I knew I don't know if he'd really done solo stuff before, but yeah, like Ponytail. Oh my God. Do Whatever You Want All the Time, or whatever the last album was, was like the year that came out was probably my most listened to record. Like, it was just, oh God.
I love this
band. Anyway.
killer band. Yeah. Kind of underrated.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like people don't really remember them very much at all.
Yeah. I mean, they were like, it was very, that was like during like this era where like Baltimore was like cranking out so many crazy mm-hmm. bands, but Ponytail, kind of like this Heat, are sort of a band where there could be no commercialization of what they did.
Right.
Because the vocalist, I mean, I don't know the records as deep as you do. Like did she eventually become more melodic later on, or was it still more of that like yelping kind of
It was still that, like on that last record, it was more melodic, but it was still like, it was that same thing, but like there weren't words really. Like, I don't, you know, and it was, yeah, I mean, it was a lot of just like, yep, but yeah, I don't know. Again, like I've never heard anybody else do anything like that, really.
Right. Yeah. And like, you know, this song is also in a category of songs where like I have a running list now of songs that just pop into my head once a month and have for my entire life since I've heard them. And this is one of them. And part of it is kind of like a cheat though, because there's a lot of allusions to other songs in this song. Because like it starts off with a drum fill that I'm pretty sure is a Beatles
drum fill. Right. I think so.
Which is pretty funny. And then like the bridge or whatever the song is Peter and the Wolf.
Oh man.
Like
I never placed that, but you're right.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like a direct rip. It's not even, you know?
Yeah.
Which is like, that's like, you know, children's music classic kind of. Yeah. But yeah, but the other main riff is a Ponytail original and is just as catchy. So yeah.
Yeah. There's like, I feel like their music it's like joyous and cathartic in ways that I don't know. I mean, I'm sure people are sick of me talking about stuff like this, but like so much music, it's so, you know, I mean, and I can't say anything, I make music that's serious, but like, man, like fun, joyful music is hard to do, like it's just hard to do, and they do it like, I don't know, I feel like they've done it just about as good as anybody in the last 10 years or something, 10-15 years.
Totally. Yeah. And you know, it's the kind of thing that you can kind of only do when you're driving it like you stole it.
Yeah.
There's like, it's very clearly like no click, like live, you know, it's like, it's not quite loose, but it's pretty raw.
Yeah.
And yeah, I got to see them live once, and that vocalist, she was just, they were like blissed out, like really kind of like on another planet. It was really, really great. Great band.
Yeah. Great, great band. Okay. What's your go-to karaoke song?
Stepping Up by Joe Jackson.
Oh, hell yeah.
Dude. Yeah. Yeah. It's like right in my register. and it's like really bouncy.
Yeah.
And like, okay. My karaoke philosophy is, first of all, I don't like the private rooms. I like for the different crews to like mingle, you know?
Absolutely.
I feel like private rooms are like almost kind of awkward in how small they are. And then I like a wireless mic. I want to go as far, like I want to like leave the room and come back in, you know, like I like to move.
Yes.
You know? And so like this Stepping Out has this like propulsive bass line that kind of just keeps things like really like almost like motoric.
Mm-hmm.
And it's classy, you know? It's like, you know, Joe Jackson's got like that croonerish kind of a thing going
Absolutely.
On. I have a friend who just went on tour with Joe Jackson.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I don't have my phone on me right now, but like when I was in England, Joe Jackson was on the cover of a magazine that clearly would only be available in England. It's called Chap Magazine. And it's just like, it's just about like English men's style.
Okay.
And, And I sent a picture of that to my friend Sam Kulik, the trombone player who was on tour with Joe Jackson. I was like, have you seen this? And he was like, that's the only press that Joe Jackson did for the tour. Just in a style magazine. And the cover had this quote for him from him where he was like, men's trousers tailoring is atrocious now. Like,
come see me on tour.
Yeah, I guess. Secondary concern, apparently.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Just, but yeah, I love that song. I think it's a great tune.
Oh, I think it's a great, yeah. That would be a really good karaoke song. And I feel like that would just, I don't know, because it's like one of those songs that, because of that, like that bass line and that groove is so sort of magnetic, it would just get people kind of going. Like, totally. I don't know. You know, this would be a good one for the, like, what's a song that puts you in the better mood from the original list of questions. Like, I don't know how you could be mad listening to this.
Totally. Yeah. Wait, well, Brad, what's your go-to karaoke song?
So I'm in Oklahoma and I can get my voice pretty low. So I often do Amarillo by Morning by George Strait. Oh. It's a country song, classic 80s country song.
Cool. I got to check it out. I don't know it.
It's yeah. So people around here love it.
Nice.
I had a period in my life where I would do Purple Rain and I would just go be totally fucking unhinged.
Cool.
And I would do it. But I've grown up.
You just reminded me of when I was living in Athens, Georgia. Like I like country music, but it's sort of as someone who's like a native New Yorker, it's always been kind of like a secondary genre for me in terms of like my listening habits. But I remember when I just moved to Georgia when I was like 20 and I was at a bar and Family Tradition by Hank Jr. came on.
Mm-hmm.
And like every college student in that bar was like screaming lyrics. And I was like, I've never heard the song in my life. What is this?
Yeah, that would be your, like, it's been a minute since I've done any karaoke, but people get really excited when, cause like Amarillo by Morning's got this, it starts at, it's like very instantly recognizable. Like if you know the songs, it's got like this like fiddle and you know, it's slow and kind of, and yeah, as soon as people hear that fiddle, that like the lead part, people are just pumped. And it's not a song you get pumped cause it's kind of a slow song. It's just like Amarillo by Morning. Anyway,
I got to check it out.
Yeah. Man, I'm going to have that. Now I'm going to get it stuck in my head. Speaking of songs, you get stuck in your head. Okay. So this next question is actually, I kind of stole from Wendy Eisenberg when I had them on and we were talking about this. So what is the funniest or silliest song?
Yeah. This is kind of a hard one for me to narrow it down. Runners up included Minimum Wage by They Might Be Giants.
Oh, yeah.
And I Trusted You by Andy Kaufman. But I wound up choosing March of the Hobbits by Don Cherry.
I love it.
Yeah. I mean, so this is also another, I have another running sort of list of songs or albums that are not available on streaming platforms.
Yeah.
Which includes a lot of the best records by Harvey Milk. And also some really great albums by The Necks. Don, I think this is on Relativity Suite, which is not on streaming for some reason.
I know. And I'm guessing, I don't know if it's because of that. Like, I don't ever hear very many people talk about Relativity Suite, and it's a fucking amazing record.
It's one of my favorite Don Cherry records. And so, March of the Hobbits is just really funny to me because it's like right up there with Led Zeppelin in terms of like, it's the 1960s and 70s. Don Cherry is cool as shit. He's, you know, doing drugs and playing international music and really into Tolkien. Really? Like, that's, yeah? That's, yeah. But also, it's just, it's like, this is sort of like the song March of the Hobbits. It's in this sort of genre that, like Sun Watchers used to be really into, which is sort of like an Eiler-esque sort of march. Mm-hmm. But it also, in a certain way, kind of also sounds like the Smurfs theme song. Yeah. And so March of the Hobbits is just like this like really goofy brass theme and then a drum solo.
Yeah. Fucking Ed Blackwell, man.
Yeah, I mean, he's a greatest
drummer ever, basically, from one of them.
Yeah, I mean, great drum solo, but it's just sort of like, it has this, like, listening to it, I was sort of, it has this vibe of everyone's just learned it. We're all kind of like looking around the studio, like, what are we doing? Okay, drum solo, and then we're going to. Hey, I guess we'll do another drum solo. Like, it's goofy. I love it.
So this year we've been having my daughter watched the Lord of the Rings movies for the first time and is now obsessed with like Tolkien. It's like reading all, like, wants to read all the books. Has like bought, anyway, we're having a Tolkien phase at my house. So
nice.
I played this for her and she was just kind of like, okay, it's got, you know, the word hobbits in it. I don't know what this has to do with Lord of the Rings, but I was like, as we've been going through this phase and thinking about this song, like, it kind of makes sense to me. Is like, it's cause it's this kind of like you said, it's if what I imagine as hobbits were playing, like, oh, we're going to do some kind of like free jazz march thing. We're barely going to learn it. We're just going to kind of fucking wing it. And it's going to be like, it fits.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like the Lord of the Rings equivalent of, what's that Star Wars thing?
Oh, the Darth Vader thing.
No. The Cantina song.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just the sort of like this, imagined, like, what were they listening to? Like, right. What's their idea of a good time?
I also like to imagine like another timeline where like Don Cherry scored the like Lord of the Rings movies or like the animated one from the 70s or something.
Yeah. Wow. Missed opportunity.
I know. But yeah. Wonderful. Okay. What's your favorite opening track on a record?
Lightsaber Cocksucking Blues. McCluskey.
Yeah. That song just rips so hard.
Are you a fan?
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, it's like that, in like full disclosure, like the way I discovered McCluskey was when that album came out, it was from a Pitchfork review. Mm. And at the time I was like really into like a lot of like super aggressive American music, like, or I don't know, like aggressive, you know, like hardcore bands. And like, you know, I was listening to a ton of Fugazi. I was listening to a ton of like Melvins. Mm-hmm. And they were like, oh, so this Welsh band and it's super intense. That was sort of the gist of the review. And I don't know, like, it sort of sits outside of the context of a lot of aggressive music in a way, you know. Yeah. Like, it doesn't like have a lot of like genre, signifiers in the music. Right. It's just like, it just sort of punches you in the face in its own, like, McCluskey is just its own thing.
Right. Absolutely.
And all, like, you know, and a lot of that is because, I mean, you know, honestly, I realize now, like, I could have said a McCluskey song is one of the funniest songs. Cause like, you know, like, Gareth Brown says, like, there's all these great songs on that record that are really, really funny. Uh-huh. But I mean, like, it just, it's explosive. It's a great tune.
Yeah. What's your favorite closing track?
Humor Me by Pere Ubu.
Man, what a song.
It's amazing. Yeah. And I mean, one of my favorite things about that song is that it comes after Sentimental Journey. Uh-huh. Is, I think, the name of the song. Uh-huh. Which I love that song too. Like, I love that whole record. I love that.
Yeah,
same. It's a great record. But like, Sentimental Journey is like that sort of gave me a whole new idea. Like, similar time frame, 20 years ago. Like, it's this long form thing where you just have a lot of really abstract musical things happening, but also glass breaking. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, like, that's a kind of trick you can all only. Like, the first time you hear it, you're like, what? They did that? But then, Humor Me, it's like the credits rolling. It sort of feels like David Thomas, like, smoking a cigarette and just being like, So what did we learn? You know, it's very, like, yeah, it's very like Rod Serling at the end of the Twilight Zone, kind of like, so what do we think, you know, is what do right. we make? What do we make of this like alien landscape that we just left? it's awesome. I love that record so much.
Yeah. I think this also kind of has a, like, it's in a different way, but there's like so much like the structure of this song and stuff. Like there's so many different parts to it. It kind of reminds, like we were talking about with This Heat, where it's just like, wait, now we're doing this. Now we're like, it's in a different way, but it gets some of that for me, but yeah, this, it's just what an amazing, like, I don't know. I think closing songs on records, yeah, that's like a perfect description. It's like the credits rolling on that record. And what a way to write. I mean, that's, yeah, that's like, I don't know. I fucking love that record so much.
Same here.
Okay. What is your favorite song? This is a Cab Baird question. So,
oh, nice.
Full disclosure. They came up with a bunch of their own questions for their episode. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to steal these now. Like, okay. But yeah, what's your favorite song to like think or meditate or just space out to?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, do you meditate, Brad?
I don't, but it's come up recently. It's like a good friend of mine in town. Just he learned, like, there's a guy in town who does these one-on-one sessions to kind of like teach you meditation, and he did this recently, and it's been a little bit life changing for him. And he was like, and the way he describes it, I'd sit and think, man, that. Something I could probably really use in my life. So I'm for the first time in my life, like very serious, like considering it very seriously in a more like, in like not in a, oh yeah, I think I'm going to learn how to meditate, but actually, yeah. So, but I don't, but I want to.
I've been doing it somewhat seriously for the last year and a half. And mm-hmm. it's definitely not something I would do while listening to music. So this is, but like, I chose Shing Key by Carl Stone because I think when I'm listening to a song like that, there's a quality of meditation to it, but it's not quite meditation for me.
Yeah.
Because for me, meditation is a focus on something that it's like non-aesthetic. It's like meant to be outside of the like observing in a thoughtful way.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
But at the same time, this piece, part of what makes it so incredible is the ways in which everything is just slowly evolving. It's insanely beautiful.
Oh my God.
I mean, he's a genius. I'm a big fan, but this piece is, I mean, I think I chose it just because it really does invite like a sort of focused listen.
Yeah.
And so like, I don't know, but like, does that really qualify as spacing out? Like, I guess you could space out to it. Like it's gentle enough that you could space out, but it does reward a focused listen.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I think like, cause yeah, one of my notes here, like I wrote for this is that it's like really hypnotizing. Like it, like the way that those vocal loops sort of break down and evolve. Like, I feel like it's like he's pulling them apart and then, you know, you get to the part where it's just like so beautiful. Oh my God. It's yeah. Like the song is, all those collections that he released like 10 years ago, whatever, it was like the 70s and 80s and 90s stuff. Mm-hmm. My God, that's like some of the best music ever made.
Yeah,
but yeah, no, that like I think that makes sense to me, and that's kind of what I was. Yeah, this is I need to reword this question, I think, because like it's funny. We were last week. My friend was over because he was helping me install this wind harp, and he was talking about how like when he does this meditation, he puts on like gray noise. He was saying like that's what. It's like great, and he has his thing he repeats or whatever. But so thinking about, yeah, like music would not be, yeah, I'll have to rethink this. But
no, I mean,
I think
I would imagine that if you'd ask, you know, for every person you ask, they're gonna have a different interpretation.
Well, that's true.
Especially because, you know, so like I do Vipassana meditation, which is its own thing, and everyone's got a different discipline or, you know, that they might be looking towards. And, you know, it's the same reason why I can't fall asleep to music, is because it activates my mind, you know?
Right.
So, and listening to this, it feels like a very active, observant, it invites an active and observant listening. And also just you sort of, it's breathtaking because you listen, it's every second of it is so beautiful. And, and also like there's that moment where the sample shifts and it resolves, which is just like, you know, that would be, that would draw all of my attention.
Yeah. I think if I think about like trying to turn my brain off when I'm listening, it's maybe like some of the stuff my daughter likes and forces me to listen to all the time, and I don't want to hear it. Like, Imagine Dragons or something. Like, just tune it out. But anyway. Okay, well, what's your favorite love song?
Yeah, I said I'll Be Your Mirror by Velvet Underground and Nico.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about, you know, I had lots of other possibilities here, but I think that it's a really beautiful, I think that, you know, there have been obviously so many love songs written that are very, that can be, you know, somewhat sentimental or treacly, or like this song, it's about a very specific kind of love, which is, you know, I'll show you how, I'll show you how beautiful you are. I'll show you.
Yeah.
I'll demonstrate for you what you mean and how you can see yourself in a loving way, which is really generous and really beautiful.
Yeah, I always think of it. It's like one of those things you hear. It's almost sort of a cliche sometimes, where people's like, "I wish that you could like see yourself the way I see you," or something. And I feel like this song captures that in this beautifully poetic way. It's just. Yeah, it's like one of the all-time great songs, but well, what's a song that you really love, but people don't really get it?
Yeah, I've been dreading this because I feel like this is, it's not really a hot take, but I said Retro Vertigo by Mr. Bungle, and I'll just, if anyone wants, you know, people are going to start turning this off. I don't know. Like, I feel like I have to like apologize for this like immediately. But I'll just say that like there are certain artists that if you don't hear them at a certain impressionable age, you're just never going to like that.
Yeah.
And I heard this band when I was in an impressionable age, and it's not my fault. It was my bass guitar teacher's fault. Blame him, don't blame me. And I get it, like everyone, you know, people like to give Mike Patton a hard time and he deserves it in certain regards, but this is a cool, it's a very nice song. I really love this song.
So to your main sentiment there, of course I totally understand what you mean. You're talking to a person who did a fucking 2-year podcast about Rancid.
I knew you'd understand.
But the funny thing is like, so I never, like, yeah, I never understood the appeal. I still don't mostly understand the appeal of Mr. Bungle. And again, I think it was just, I first heard it when I was in my like mid 20s or something. Like, I didn't hear it when, yeah. Anyway, I didn't get it. This song is kind of great though. I really like this song.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the thing, like, so I remember when I was like 13 or 14 years old, my bass teacher, John Middleman, he brought over a bunch of CDs for me to borrow. And one of them was the first Mr. Bungle album. And it was like, oh, this is wacky. This is like silly. And I was just at the right time, right place at the right time.
Yeah.
And then like, as they're out, you know, as I found more of the music and as I got older, it became more like, it's like the kind of thing where you hear something, you're like, this is kind of illegal. Like, this is not like, I had enough, I think, I was able to just be like, this is really silly. I don't need to be listening to this. But that song, Retro Vertigo, was sort of like an outlier on that on their final album. Mm-hmm. And it's like very contemplative. It's really pretty. And also just like, I have so many sentimental attachments to that record. Like,
sure.
It like makes me think about like Thanksgiving, where after dinner, my friends and I would all convene at our friend Craig's apartment. He's just got like the best stereo, and we would hang out until late. And like inevitably, someone would be like, "We got to put on that Mr. Bungle album," and like it brings me back to a certain like youthful vibe. Right. And so, I can't expect people who haven't had that experience to to ride with that band or song, but I'm me, so
I could answer like at least 10 different Rancid songs for this, and everyone would be like, I don't. Although I'll tell you, if you want to like ever, if you're trying to like not do a thing for 2 years, like where you listen to that band and talk about it every week, and you will never want to listen to it again in your life.
Are you done with Rancid forever?
I haven't listened to it since. So we recorded the last episodes in like February or March of this year. Haven't listened to them once since.
Yeah, you're good.
I don't know if I, and I think about it, although I did listen to, just mostly to annoy my daughter, the Tim Time Bomb version of You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch the other night, because we were talking about versions of that song. And, and I was like, oh, you want to hear the worst one?
I didn't know that existed.
You don't need to. What's the song? This is another cap-aired question. What's a song that makes you want to get up and move your body? Shake your ass.
Yeah. Stop Bajon by Tulio de Piscopo.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I used to be in this band, Nymph. And that band, whenever we would practice, the first person at the practice space would like DJ, like off their iPod, you know? Uh-huh. And Matty McDermott from that band, I came in one day and that song was playing, and I was like, what is this? And he looked at me with a little smirk, and he did the like finger wagging, like, kind of like, it's got that sort of like finger wagging, like shoulder shaking kind of like groove. And it's like very, I think it's Italian. I don't know who this guy.
Yeah, this was like apparently a number one hit in Italy.
Yeah, that tracks.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's like I watched the video once, and like the guy kind of looks like Paul McCartney, like but like with a big like 70s hair, and I don't know. It's just got this like it sort of reminds me of Abdul Jamal's version of Poinciana.
I can see that. Yeah,
which I think did I talk about that last time I was on the show? I may have.
We may have. I've done 60 of these since then. I don't know.
Really, really, they're great groove, you know?
It is, yeah. And there's like the instrumentation on it. It's all wild because it's like, now there's this, now there's this, now there's this. Like, it's like one thing comes in, goes away. Never heard of again. Here comes a horn. Here comes, nope, nah. Yeah, I don't know. The whole thing's kind of insane. Apparently, it was also, when I was reading about it, it was big at raves. Which again totally tracks.
Totally.
I'll have to play it for my wife, because my wife was big before we met. She was like went to a lot of raves. I'll have to be like, do you know this? Does this bring back? You can have like some visceral reaction to this. You're just gonna be like, oh shit.
Yeah, acid flashback.
Okay, what's a song that at first you didn't like it, you couldn't stand it, but now you love it?
Okay, a song that I didn't like at first, now I really like. You know, honestly, when I first heard Kate Bush, it didn't really hit for me.
Really?
Yes. I don't know. Like, I think that the dramaticness of it, sort of like what I was saying about Genesis, like the pomp, like, I think that there's certain kinds of like, I think that the first time I heard Kate Bush, and I guess it would have been like, Hounds of Love, like it was just, it felt like almost like melodramatic to me.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah, But then I was on tour with the band Quaihoos, and they were listening to that a ton, and I was like, oh, you know what? It's actually rips.
Is there a particular Kate Bush song that, like, do you have a favorite, I guess?
The song Hounds of Love, yeah. I don't know. It's kind of a basic, you know, one, but yeah, I don't know. But, like, it with her, I think that she's, like, such a world-building artist, mm-hmm. that at first it's a kind of thing that, like, it can be alternatively alienating and inviting.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. I think it's, like, one of those, she's one of, and I think about this, that there's a lot of artists like this, where it's, like, at least for me, it's, like, it can be hard to find your way in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because it's, yeah, like, she had, I don't know, like, it's one of those things, too, where, well, maybe not as much, but I talk about Low a lot on this podcast because it was a band that for the longest time I just couldn't find my way in, and then I finally did, and now it's like, oh my god, they're amazing, of course.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, when there's, I don't know, I totally, that makes sense to me, because she's, I think, like, world building is a really good description of her work.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's such a fully formed thing. And I think there are aspects to her music that are, like, I think that there are certain production things that you could hear them as dated, or you could hear them as, like, its own thing.
Yeah. You know?
Like a twist on that era.
Yeah.
You know? And there's, like, a mystical quality to it that I think at first you might sort of, like, it's maybe something that you could, I wrote it off
at first.
As being sort of like almost sort of woo woo. Mm-hmm. But then once it clicked, it was like, oh, this is like some of the greatest music ever.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. If you were running for a political office or a professional wrestler, did you take a particular angle on this one?
Political office.
Okay. What would be the song you came out on stage to?
Yeah, that would be Go Insane by Lindsey Buckingham. Yeah.
Amazing.
And you know, like, it's funny because, like, so the reason why I chose it is because I was imagining myself as a sort of Jack Nicholson in Batman style demagogue.
Yeah.
Like, throwing cash off of a float in a parade, you know? And obviously, like, you know, that all that music from that movie is Prince, but, like, the song Go Insane has a similar sort of, like, manic 80s kind of
coked out.
Yeah, like, it's in the title, Insanity,
right? You know?
but also I was listening to it again this morning, and the lyrics are so evil in that sort of, like, 80s way, where he's, the opening line of the song is there's two kinds of people in this world, winners and losers. You know?
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, and I was thinking about, like, that guy who's the president of Argentina, like, the what do they call him, like, the crazy man or something?
Oh, right, yeah.
You know? And I was just like, you know, because I think that, like, not to get too into the fucking weeds about this shit, but, like, there's all this discussion now of, like, how can the left, like, capture the mania, like, you know, who can be the left
Trump? Trump, right, you know? Which, yeah.
It's fucking... I don't even want to, like, tell you how we're all angry, but I was like, me, you know, if that was me, if I was trying to do that, if I was trying to take that kind of an angle, it would be like, I'm the kind of crazy motherfucker that's going to give everyone health care,
you know?
Which, like, it's not crazy. They do it everywhere except for it's not crazy at all, but I guess, like, if you wanted to try to take that angle of, like, I'm the crazy motherfucker who's gonna try it, you know, like, go insane by Lindsey Buckingham, you
turn
know,
turn into a fucking game show, it's like Trump did, you know, and, like,
I guess that's some people, I suppose, believe that that's the only way you can get Americans' attention. But in any case, yeah, I love that song. I love that album. Have you heard that album?
Yes, I love that. I am a huge Lindsey Buckingham fan. I think, like we had this conversation on an early episode about how like Fleetwood Mac is this sort of like choose your fighter band, and you can learn a lot about people, like who's your like Fleetwood Mac person. Like huh. I'm like Team Lindsay all the way.
Interesting.
His like 80s stuff is, it's insane. Like I love him so much. I don't know anything about him as a person. Probably a lot of problems there, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, whatever. This album is great.
Yeah. I heard him on a podcast. I think he was on Song Exploder a couple of years ago. Oh. And I mean, he's probably in his like late 70s at this point.
Yeah.
Dude sounded like the Crypt Keeper. I'm sorry. Like, he sounded like he's lived like five lifetimes. Yeah.
He kind of has. He's 75. I just looked it up.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, he sounded pretty haggard, but he's had fun.
It seems like it. Yeah. I think he stopped touring with Fleetwood Mac. Maybe not. I don't know. I know because
I believe he was fired.
Was he fired again? Well, I know, you know, they all came back together and like the original band are not, I mean, Christine McVie's not around and a couple of them, but like I saw them however many years ago now. I don't know. It was like, you know, a big arena concert. And it was him, it was Stevie. I think this was before Christine McVie died. I have like no concept of time anymore, but maybe he got fired again. It's kind of like the, you know, when David Lee Roth like came back to Van Halen for like a minute and got fired again.
Right. Wait, I can confirm something here. This is actually in a text exchange that I had with Maurice about a week ago.
Oh, excellent.
Where she says, I recently read part of the reason he finally got fired from Fleetwood Mac on this last tour is because he was a huge dick to Harry Styles, and I was just like, hell yeah.
Yeah. See? Again, Team Lindsay. Here we go. I love, what a great way. Wow. You get fired from your band because you're a dick to Harry Styles. To me, that would make, you know, it doesn't really work this way, but you should be promoted to like president of your band if you're a dick to Harry Styles.
Exactly. Thus the political office.
Right.
All ties. There you go.
Yes, there we go. All right. What? We're going to end it on a real uplifting note. What's the song you want played at your funeral?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. Like, I don't know. Do you have songs that are sort of like protected behind glass? Like you can't listen to them?
Mm-hmm. There's been a couple that have come up on this show and I was like, not going to listen to it.
Yeah. Sorry. So my answer was Beside You by Van Morrison, which is on Astral Weeks.
Yeah.
And I made that choice a long time ago where I was listening to it and I was like, this is what I want played at the funeral. Dude. And it's a really, that whole record is like, I have a lot of like sentimental attachment to, not even sentimental. It's just like emotional attachment where it's like, I mean, he's like Van Morrison. He's another dude where, like, what an asshole. And, like, has proved that time and time again. And, like, I don't really care about, like, the hit, like, Brown Eye Girl. Like, that's fine. But, like, that on Astral Weeks, it's like they, like, went to the studio and, like, opened something up.
Yeah.
He never returned. You know, just got it completely correct for that, however long it took for them to record that album. And that, but that song is like cosmic. Like it's.
Yeah. Yeah. I listened to it once and was like, yeah, I'm not going to re-listen to this again. I mean, I've heard it before, of course, but like it's, that's a good pick. It's so fucking heavy. God, it's so beautiful.
Yeah. Really, really beautiful record that like, I mean, I think, I got into that album right when I'd moved to Athens, Georgia, when I was 20, and it was just sort of this, like, it made me like feel very lucky to be there. And I remember there's a line in that album where he said, this town has found you. And I was like, it was like a very like a moment of like feeling like I'd finally found like a home that wasn't the place where I grew up. But then like that song beside you, it just sort of like, it took on this other kind of quality where I was like, that's the one.
Yeah. I think Astral Weeks is one of those, cause I think I was like 19 or 20 when I heard it for the first time. And that's like one of those out. Yeah. That I don't know. I can't wait for like, you know, my kid's like really into music and stuff, and I'm not pushing anything on, like she's in her like Taylor Swift, Charlie XCX phase and all that, which fine, whatever. But like, I can't wait to like for her to get to like hear albums like this for the first time. Like if she stays like really into music, and who knows, maybe it won't have any connection for her, but I don't know. Like I think Astral Weeks, like you said, it's one of those albums where something happened. I don't know what happened and how, like some, like the stars aligned, the universe, some sort of magic happened and this record was made, and it's just undeniably something more than just a record.
And it's special.
Yeah. And you know, like you said, and what else is, you know, if you make that record, you don't have to do anything else for the rest of your career. You can just like,
and he shouldn't have.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yes. Yeah. He should have rode off into the sunset and never been, you know,
yeah.
So, I mean, but what then, a story then, that would have been.
But then we never would have heard why are you on Facebook?
that's true, which is, you know,
era classic.
Song I wish I could hear again for the first time because it was so impactful.
Song I wish I could go back in time and unhear.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good question. See, here we go.
Like a Tenet thing where like I will go and unhear that music.
Yeah, just yeah, that god. Well, this was once again a whole lot of fun.
Yeah, thanks, Brad.
And went all sorts of weird places as it always does. Anything you want to promote for 2025?
Well, new Modern Nature album is going to come out, and I'm wrapping up another album of my own songs that I'm hoping will people be able to hear in 2025 as well.
Awesome. Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
All right.
Sweet. Thanks, Brad.
Yeah. Once again, thank you to Jeff Tobias for coming on again. Just going all out is a blast. Jeff's the best. Love Jeff. Mandatory Liberation Volume 1 is out now. Link to that in the show notes. Link to all the playlist of the show notes. And also new this year, and this was suggested by a reader and it's a great idea, song list in the show notes. So if you know you just want to look at the song list before, or with, you know, I don't know, it just, I think it's really helpful because the email that I got kind of gave me that feedback, made a lot of sense. And I should probably reply to that email, but anyway, thank you all for listening. Thanks to Jeff. As ever, if you are enjoying the show, please leave a rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts. If you really extra like it, you can not subscribe, but you can support it through the Patreon, patreon.com/foxydigitalis. For a couple bucks a month, you get episodes early. They're extended, including the remix episodes. There's a Patreon section for that too. And yeah, it just keeps all this whole ship trying to move forward. And it's, yeah, it is what it is. Appreciate everybody who has done that so far. Y'all are the real MVPs. Until next time, keep on listening to whatever the hell you want.